case is Kursar versus Department of Homeland Security. Breida.
Your Honor, may it please the court. Counsel to my right on the briefs, Kevin Owen, and I represent Mr. Kursar. Several issues in this case. This court is familiar with the case. This is the second time around. The first I'd like to address is the impact of the Canadian trial court's decision on the MSPB judge's decision. First, I want to say what we're not arguing here. There are many times in board litigation where external sources, such as reports of the Comptroller General, other courts, Senate, other investigative committees, General Accounting Office, Inspectors General, auditing committees are useful, helpful, and carry weight in board proceedings. What we're not arguing here is that all extrinsic evidence is inadmissible or unworthy of weight in an MSPB case. Not at all, quite to the contrary. What we are arguing is in the specific circumstances of this case, it was an abuse of discretion for the judge of the MSPB to rely upon the Canadian trial court's decision to discredit several affidavits of individuals sworn to testify as to the truth.
Why didn't they testify?
When did they testify?
Why did they not testify?
There was no... The hearing request was
Johnson,
withdrawn.
Johnson, Murphy, Barker, none of them.
The hearing request was withdrawn. One of the problems, I can only conjecture because I was not counsel of the case. These were Canadian... These people, some of them were living in Canada. They were beyond the reach of subpoena. But beyond that, I don't know because I didn't handle the case below.
Were they involved in the insurance fraud case?
No, not as far as the record reflects. There's one question with respect to Mr. Johnson, whether he was the same Johnson who was involved in the insurance fraud case. The judge found the record was inconclusive and made no determination.
Isn't it correct, though, that Mr. Kursar never sought leave to respond to the agency's closing brief? It never objected to the agency's submission? And isn't that kind of fatal to your argument here today, that the judge could not have considered the agency's final submission?
Not at all, Your Honor, and I appreciate the question. I was going to get to that. That was our second point in the Shucker case that was decided by this court in 2002. The court had before it a similar set of circumstances. They're never the same, of course. These situations arise all the time with problems in the closing of a record where no hearing has been requested and one side or the other submits some evidence that needs rebuttal at the close of the record. It happens quite frequently. So in the Shucker case in 2002, the court surveyed the law. They went back to the original decision of the board, or at least the earliest that they cited, Schultz, in 1982. In Schultz, it was just like this. The judge closed the record. There was some rebuttal evidence that probably should have been submitted, but the record was closed with the evidence that was necessary to respond to coming in. And what the appellant did was object for the first time through an administrative petition for review to the MSPB. The MSPB said, right, you're correct, remanded the case back to the judge. And that was the law that this court found to be the leading case. I'm not sure I'm using the words correctly, but that was a case upon which this court certainly relied in the Shucker case. And in the Shucker case, the court expressly reserved the question of whether some type of conduct, such as you have just suggested, Judge, would be equivalent to a waiver. But since the Shucker case, the board hasn't come up with any regulation or any case law that I'm aware of, nor has this court, to my knowledge, that has suggested that what occurred here would be a waiver. What occurred here was similar to Schultz, and Schultz was one of the cases upon which this court relied in Shucker.
Just for legal purity, what is the exception to the hearsay rule that would have allowed these affidavits in the first place?
The exception to the hearsay rule that would have allowed...
They're all saying, well, I heard Johnson say, that's hearsay.
They're all
offering it for the truth of what he said. What would allow that to get in?
If this was a district court, I suspect
yes.
It wouldn't come in.
Okay.
But it's the merits.
But it's an administrative procedure, okay.
And the MSPB allows hearsay. Many of their decisions are based entirely upon hearsay. There's hearsay all over the place.
But the administrative judge could take that into consideration as further reason to question the veracity.
I don't know that he could, because then he'd have no evidence at all. This case was decided on affidavits. If he discredits all the hearsay, he has no record. If he has no record, he can't decide the case.
No, he's got testimony. He's got the testimony of a witness.
He had before him.
He's got Hom. Hom saying this particular probationary employee likes to file lawsuits on USERRA. And why can't he credit that?
Your Honor, that's not what Hom said, sir. What Hom said was quite to the contrary. The question...
He misrepresents himself and other things, yes. That there had been earlier USERRA cases brought, whatever Hom testifies. He has Hom's testimony on the record, right?
Hom denied making those statements. The Johnson affidavit came to this court. The court said the Johnson affidavit is significant enough to remand it to the board to figure out what to do about it. On remand, the board said, Judge, look at this affidavit, take such further evidence as the parties offer, decide the credibility of the evidence, issue a decision. That's what the judge did. The problem, Your Honors, was not...
But there's nothing in the record except Johnson's affidavit that contradicts the Hom testimony, is there?
Yes, there is, sir. There are the affidavits of Mr. Murphy and Mr. Barber and the contemporaneous notes of Mr. Murphy.
And when the agency tried to depose Mr. Johnson,
yes.
And he was not available.
Yes, that's
so
true, Your Honor.
Who has the burden here? I mean, didn't your client have some sort of a burden? We've got Mr. Hom's testimony on the record denying all of this stuff.
But that
you
is
produce an affidavit from Mr. Johnson, who was not made available for the government to cross-examine or question. Why doesn't that end the matter?
Well, with respect, Your Honor, that's not the end of the matter, because that was not the basis of the judge's decision. The judge's decision was not Mr. Hom is more credible because he testified than these affiants. The judge's decision was based on the fact that he wholly discredited, in the first instance, the affiants because of Cursor's conduct as it was reflected in the Canadian trial court.
Well, that's
decision.
Not really true. The judge decided, did he not, this case on two alternative
yes,
bases.
Yes, I said the first instance. I was going
okay.
to get to the second.
All right.
Why don't you just deal with the issue that Cursor was convicted along with someone as the same name as this Johnson of insurance fraud in Canada, and it looks like that they have a bit of a record of being in cahoots to defraud.
Sir, he was not convicted. It was a civil action and a civil fraud claim. So as far as the application of, for example, Federal Rule of Evidence 609, which would deal with a criminal conviction, it's inapplicable. And I do want to talk about the Federal Rules of Evidence for just a moment. As you just mentioned, sir, the Merit Systems Protection Board does not follow the Federal Rules of Evidence, since half of its work depends upon hearsay. But on occasion, when they find it useful and interesting and helpful, they do cite to and follow the Federal Rules of Evidence. And for example, in Rule 608 and 609, there have been a couple cases by the board cited in our brief where the board has either, they've affirmed the judge's application of the rule with approval. Either
I'm trying to hear you address directly what evidently the administrative judge responded to. And I hear you talking about administrative distinctions over criminal procedure, but I'm trying to hear why this administrative judge erred in taking all this into consideration and saying, I'm sticking with Hom.
What he did, in order to be able to reach that result and create a basis for its decision on substantial evidence, sir, he had to discredit the affidavits of three individuals who, at least two of them, had absolutely...
None of whom testified, even though they were sought.
No, I'm not sure that I cannot tell you, and I cannot agree with you with respect to anyone searching out Mr. Murphy and Mr. Barber. That I do not know, sir.
Did you bring him forward?
Sir, Mr. Murphy was deposed, and Murphy's deposition is in the record. He did not testify, but his deposition there, and his deposition testimony is corroborated by his contemporaneous notes of the conversation that he witnessed between Mr. Blake and Major Hom in the spring of 2002. That's testimony, sir. It may be hearsay because it's out of reach of the judge, but testimony it is. So you had the testimony of Mr. Murphy, the contemporaneous notes, which were not mentioned by the judge, that corroborated Mr. Murphy's testimony and deposition and Mr. Murphy's affidavit. You had the sworn affidavit of Mr. Barber, who has no relationship at all, didn't even know Mr. Cursor. And then you have Johnson. So what the judge did was to say Cursor was such a bad man. And I can read
this. So at the best, you're going to ask us to reweigh the evidence, which we can't really do.
I'm going to ask you to remand the case to the board, which should have considered this in the first instance, sir. These objections were raised with the MSPB.
We did that once, and they did consider it.
They sent the Johnson affidavit back to the board, judge, to make a determination with respect to credibility of everything that's been said. There are lots of conflicts in this record. When the judge did what he did, the matter was taken up, just as it is with this court right now, to the board on an administrative petition for review, which short form it, a summary affirmation, if you will. And that leaves these fascinating issues for this court in the first instance, including the question of closing of the record, which since Shucker has not been decided by this court and has not been decided by the board. So we're not asking you to reweigh the evidence. We're asking you to send it back to the board, which should have examined it. And since you mentioned reweighing the evidence, what you have here is affidavit evidence. These affidavits are not entitled, as I understand it, to the same level of credibility deference as would be sworn testimony before the MSPB. I can read the affidavits, you can read the affidavits, anybody can read these and come to their own conclusions. But one of the conclusions that the judge should not have come to was simply because Cursor was considered a bad person by the Canadian court to make a determination. And this is what the judge did. I cannot rely on Mr. Johnson's affidavit because the probability is... please excuse me. A11 of the appendix. Corrected appendix, sir.
All right.
Thank you. I get carried away.
This is at the very bottom of the...
Yes, sir.
About five lines up from the bottom.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I cannot rely on Mr. Johnson's affidavit because the probability is too high that the appellant manufactured this document with the intent of deceiving the court, that's you, and the board. That's subordination of perjury. He goes on to say, I cannot ignore the appellant's record of submitting false documents and enlisting his friends and confederates. That's on the next page, 812. In light of the broad scope of the appellant's efforts to defraud the BCAA, I cannot rely on the testimony of Mr. Murphy, on the affidavits of Mr. Johnson and Mr. Barber. He is attributing to these gentlemen, at least certainly as to Barber and Murphy, who had no connection that I'm aware of or that's in the record with the Canadian court litigation or whatever was happening with Mr. Cursor and the insurance company, and essentially saying these affidavits were efforts of subordination of perjury. That's an administrative abuse of discretion. How can he make that judgment? There's nothing on the record to do so except the Canadian court decision involving Cursor. And Cursor's credibility is not an issue here, sir. It may seem strange, but the real issue here is what did Major Hom say to Mr. Blake?
Well, putting it in context, you have a one-month probationary employee who is hanging on by the shoestring of a USERRA allegation, right? Probationary employees generally have almost no rights.
That's true, sir.
And the only way they can stay in the game at all jurisdictionally is to make some kind of claim such as has been done. But that claim itself hangs by some pretty thin reeds, doesn't it?
It hangs by a statutory reed, sir, which Congress passed for the protection of veterans. Yes, sir. And okay. I would call that a slender reed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Broidler.
Yes,
let's hear from the government.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. Holt?
Thank you. May it please the court. The only way Mr. Cursor can succeed in his appeal is if this court finds the board's credibility determination to not be supported by substantial evidence. As this court has held, credibility determinations are virtually unreviewable. Mr. Cursor has not presented evidence sufficient to overturn the board's finding that Mr. Johnson's affidavit is not credible and probative.
Well, now you know, you're certainly correct in stating what the framework is. But it seems to me that the problem in this case, as Mr. Broyd has laid it out, is not simply that the administrative judge said, I believe Major Hom, and I think, taking all the evidence together, that's the way I come down. But rather, the administrative judge has perhaps said too much in that the administrative judge has detailed why he finds the contrary evidence to be not credible, and therein, in so doing, has perhaps made more of that evidence than can reasonably be attributed to it. I mean, if he had said, for example, I believe Major Hom because I'm a Presbyterian and he's a Presbyterian. You know, if he left out the Presbyterian talk, he'd be fine. But he adds that, and suddenly I think we have reversible error. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, not in this case, Your Honor.
No, but in that case.
Perhaps if the case had absolutely nothing to do with whether someone was a Presbyterian, you may be correct, Your Honor.
Okay, but so what we really have to focus on is, it seems to me, the rationality of the judge's explanations of the reasons that he made the credibility determination. So the fact that credibility determinations are great, given great deference, is all very fine and good, but that's not the issue that I think is presented as I read this case, which is a narrower question of how rational are the inferences drawn by the judge in this case.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, you have a specific situation where the judge discredited Mr. Johnson's affidavit for two independent reasons. One reason is essentially what Mr. Broder was just up here talking about, because of, in part, the BC, the British Columbia Supreme Court decision. Based on that decision and that evidence, the administrative judge found that Mr. Johnson's affidavit was not credible and probative. However, the judge made an independent finding, separate and apart from the British Columbia Supreme Court decision, and found separately and independently that he also did not find Mr. Johnson's affidavit credible and probative. And that language is at A12 of the corrected appendix. And it states that even if Mr. Aldridge had not contacted the agency regarding the lawsuit, the British Columbia Supreme Court lawsuit, I would still find not credible the affidavits provided by Mr. Johnson and Mr. Barber, or, for that matter, the testimony of Mr. Murphy. The administrative judge then gave four specific reasons as to why he did not find Mr. Johnson's affidavit credible and probative. So even if this court were to agree with Mr. Cursor's first two points in his brief, that Mr. Cursor should have had an opportunity to respond to the British Columbia Supreme Court decision, or that the British Columbia Supreme Court decision should not have been admitted into the record, even if this court finds that those two decisions by the administrative judge were in error, this court is left with an independent credibility determination by the administrative judge that's separate and apart from that document, that Mr. Johnson's affidavit is not credible and probative. And when you are left with simply the affidavit and the specific reasons that the judge laid out, in part citing Hillen, but laid out as to why he found Mr. Johnson's affidavit not credible and probative, Mr. Cursor simply cannot meet the level of proof required to overturn the judge's credibility finding. That is a credibility finding that is virtually unreviewable.
Well, he also, Mr. Cursor, had the opportunity to rebut anything in the Canadian court proceeding if he wished, and did not do so, right?
Your Honor, that is absolutely our view. We do not find, based on our briefs, and I can elaborate here, we certainly
he
do not.
He complains that he relied on it, but when he doesn't address an allegation of that dimension, it's rather hard not to take it into consideration, right?
No, you are correct, Your Honor. The letter, there was initially a letter from the attorney for the insurance company that was on the other side in the British Columbia Supreme Court case, and that was turned over during discovery, and that letter raised the issue of whether a Duke Matthew Johnson was the same as a Matthew Johnson, and whether Mr. Cursor had committed fraud.
To what extent, now, in the affidavits, the administrative judge makes the points that the affidavits track the language of the USERRA statute so conveniently that it's hard to believe they're the language of any affiant at all. They seem to be something with a legal hand involved. Is that appropriate to take into consideration?
Your Honor, it is. That is one of the specific reasons why the judge had independently discredited Mr. Johnson's affidavit. I think it's also important to note...
Is that the Barber affidavit as well?
Mr. Johnson's affidavit?
No, is that the Barber affidavit as well? That
actually was all three affidavits,
yes,
Mr. Johnson's, Mr. Murphy, and Mr. Barber. On remand was the question.
They're all kind of reciting the elements,
yes,
of the USERRA, which is somewhat unusual for people that are supposed to be just giving their...
Yes, Your Honor. That is certainly the judge's point. And I will point out that the judge was even more specific than that. It wasn't even that, for example, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Murphy, or Mr. Barber themselves tracked the language, but that the language they attributed to Major Hom tracked the USERRA language. So it's not even... It's not even conceivable that Mr. Cursor, for example, can come back and say, well, perhaps the language was tracked because my attorney wrote it. And certainly, as we know, attorneys do help out with affidavits sometimes. But it was...
So on the face of the affidavits brings a certain amount of credibility into to play already.
Credibility to Major Hom and incredibility to the affidavits themselves, Your Honor.
On that point, what... I'm looking at the Barber affidavit. Do you have it there? It's at Appendix 236, 2-36. This is the
yes, Your Honor.
Main white appendix.
Yes, Your Honor, I have it.
And what is it there that you think the administrative judge was finding, was tracking the language of the statute?
Well, with respect to, I believe he looked at all three. With respect to Mr. Barber's affidavit, as you stated, on 2-36.
Right.
For example, I'm quoting, for example, Hom stated that Cursor could not be trusted and that he was a rat because Cursor filed a lawsuit against his former employer over military leave. I also remember that Hom called Cursor a bad egg and that Cursor should not be hired. So it's this sort of language that's tracking. And
how does that track the statute? I mean, it's just, I'm not sure where the tracking is there.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, USERRA protects, as I know this court is aware, USERRA protects someone who is in the military or who exercises their rights and protects them from retaliation.
As I understand it, it's undisputed, or at least I think it's undisputed, that Mr. Cursor did file a previous USERRA lawsuit against his prior employer, the sheriff's office, I think, of one of the counties out there. Right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So that's a fact that
yes,
he
Your
did
Honor.
File. All right. So what this affidavit is saying that Major Hom said was that he filed a lawsuit against his former employer over military leave, right?
Well, and that he was a rat.
The statute doesn't have anything about rats.
No, Your Honor. But the statute, but the statute is very clear. That you can't retaliate because someone filed a lawsuit.
Right,
so if someone
that
characterizes you as a bad person or someone that should not be hired as a rat, they shouldn't be hired.
If you were telling me that Barber had said that he was retaliated against on account of a protected USERRA activity, to wit, prior service in the military or something, then that might be persuasive. But I just don't see anything here that fits into the administrative judge's characterization of tracking the statute.
Well, Your Honor, the judge did look at all three affidavits, but that is, as I said, is an example of, it's not just that someone filed a lawsuit over military leave, but I'm then going to characterize them badly and suggest they should not be hired because they filed a lawsuit over military leave.
Okay.
So, as I said, Your Honor, regardless of the British Columbia Supreme Court decision and whether that was admissible or not, whether Mr. Cursor had the opportunity to respond to the agency's filings or not. That is covered in our briefs. We do not agree with Mr. Cursor's argument on that. We find that it has no merit. Regardless of that, however, the judge did make an independent credibility finding. That credibility finding is virtually unreviewable. It was supported by the judge for specific reasons. And for this, these reasons and the reasons in our brief, we believe that this court should affirm the board's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Holt. Mr. Broida, you have a little over 2 minutes remaining.
Try to use them well. Thank you, Your Honors. First, with respect to the virtually unreviewable language, that first came up in this court's decision in the Homs case. There's nothing in the Supreme Court that I know of that engendered that type of language.
I've read that in Broida before.
Well, it's in my book. This court has had other decisions, including Habee or Habee, 288 Fed 3rd, 1288, where it says, we do not read our precedent as creating or endorsing any such distinction. They're talking about distinctions in levels of deference, because our cases have only required deference when an administrative judge was able to observe the demeanor of a testifying witness, and as a result, the administrative judge's findings were explicitly or implicitly based on the demeanor of the witness. There was no demeanor evaluation, and with respect to the business of the tracking of the affidavits, you have to understand, Your Honors, these people, these three people, Johnson, Murphy, and Barber, were listening to the same conversation. They were listening to a conversation that was being conducted between Johnson and Mr. Hom, Major Hom, or whatever he was, Colonel Hom. They're listening to the same thing. They're relating the same thing. Murphy made notes at the time. It's obviously going to track. They're talking about the same thing.
But Murphy says, Cursor reported of discrimination of his military rights by his police supervisors.
Yes.
That's typical language?
No. I mean, if somebody says, one of my clients reported discrimination by going to an EEO counselor, that's exactly what they did. It's not tracking statutory language. Barber, for example, says in his affidavit at Appendix 235 to 36, Hom stated Cursor could not be trusted and that he was a rat because Cursor filed a lawsuit against a former employer over military leave. I recall that Horn called Cursor a bad egg and Cursor should not be hired. If you look at the other affidavits here, Murphy, for example, Appendix 234, Hom said that based on Cursor's reporting of discrimination of his military rights by his police supervisors, he didn't work for the police, he worked for a sheriff, he was a troublemaker and a bad egg that was willing to rat on other police officers and start internal investigations over trivial matters, amounting to nothing.
You say we send it back, we have another hearing.
Yes.
Let's assume these folks are unavailable and don't show up.
Yes.
You're suggesting that you can't really make or the questionable credibility determinations if you don't have witnesses there. So you've got Mr. Hom's you're still left with Mr. Hom's testimony and three or four affidavits of persons not available to be deposed or cross-examined. What is an AJ supposed to do with that?
That's a very good question. If I were the AJ, I would think very hard about that. But one of the things the council is going to have to think about and the board will have to think about is what to do about this decision of the British trial court, anyway, which triggered this whole problem with this judge.
Well, let's assume that we decide to leave that out.
All right, you leave it out. All right, then the judge...
At some point, he's going to have to make some determination as to who is telling the truth here, right?
Yes.
And he's got four affidavits and prior testimony of someone else.
He has prior
and
he's testimony.
And free, is he not, to discredit those vis-a-vis Colonel Hom?
On a rational basis, yes. But not on the basis of just using an enchanted blanket of language saying that the deposition or the transcripts of the affidavits track. Of course they track. They're talking about the same conversation.
Well, somebody is lying. I mean, someone is not telling the truth.
Somebody's
there's major inconsistency, and it's just hard for me to see what you're asking for in terms of having a reasonable assurance later on that he follows the right procedures. It's hard
for me to tell
what you're asking for.
With respect, Your Honor, what the judge did not evaluate, at least according to his decision, I don't know what's going on in his mind, but he had before him more than those three affidavits. He had, as you have mentioned, the testimony of Major Hahn, for whatever it was worth. Major Hahn denied doing anything wrong before the board. Naturally, we wouldn't be here. and that's where the credibility issue is. He also had the deposition testimony of Mr. Murphy. He also had before him the contemporaneous notes of Mr. Murphy, neither of which he described or discredited in his decision. So there's a
little
bit
more. Thank you, Mr. Broida. I think we've reached
Your Honors, I thank you for your patience. Appreciate
thank
it.
You very much. Our last case this morning is Toffus versus Dudas.